From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now!
The administration has been very clear that we put a significant down payment on the table. But with regard to benefits and coverage, we want to leave everything on the table at this point.
White House Budget Director Peter Orszag testifying on President Obama's multi-billion dollar plans for health care reform, but all options are not on the table. President Obama has already rejected a single-payer health care plan. What's more, single-payer solutions get almost no space in the debate, either in newspapers, on television, or on Capitol Hill. What is single-payer? Who are its advocates? Today, we speak with three of them. Dr. Quentin Young is the most well-known single-payer advocate in America. He was Reverend Dr. King's doctor when he lived in Chicago, had been a friend and ally of Obama's for years, but was not invited to the White House Health Care Summit. Jerry Jenkins is co-president of a newly formed union of 150,000 registered nurses. And Russell McKiber, editor of Corporate Crime Reporter, has just formed Single Payer Action. He's burning his health insurance bill today outside the national meeting of the American Health Insurance Plans. Then voters in El Salvador head to the polls Saturday for an historic presidential election. We'll speak with Democratic Congressmember Raul Grijalva of Tucson, Arizona. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. U.S. intelligence analysts have concluded Iran lacks sufficient material for a nuclear weapon and has not yet decided if it wants to try to make one. Testifying on Capitol Hill Tuesday, Defense Intelligence Agency Director Lieutenant General Michael Maples was questioned by Republican Senator John McCain.
General Maples, do you believe that it is Iran's intention to develop nuclear weapons?
I believe they are holding open that option, sir. But I don't believe they've yet made that decision.
The Senate has approved a $410 billion omnibus spending bill to fund the federal government for much of this year. The vote came after the Treasury Department assured supporters of the U.S. embargo on Cuba that new provisions in the bill will mark almost no change from current policy. The spending bill was held up last week amidst opposition to several provisions loosening trade and travel restrictions with Cuba. But in a letter sent to lawmakers opposed to easing the embargo, Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner said the provisions will be narrowly enforced. As the Obama administration touted the continued restrictions, a group of South American defense ministers issued a call for ending the embargo. The 12 ministers were gathered at a meeting of the 12-country Union of South American Nations, or UNASUR. This is the Uruguayan defense minister, Jose Bayardi.
Right now, Cuba does not represent any security problem for the U.S., and U.S. policies with respect to Cuba is more determined by international pressure, by lobby, by North American Cubans. That's the frank analysis of the situation.
President Obama has proposed a new set of reforms to fix what he calls a crumbling education system. On Tuesday, Obama called for a longer school year and higher pay for top teachers.
The future belongs to the nation that best educates its citizens. And my fellow Americans, we have everything we need to be that nation. We have the best universities, the most renowned scholars. We have innovative principals and passionate teachers and gifted students. And we have parents whose only priority is their child's education.
Vice President Joe Biden was in Brussels Tuesday to make a new appeal for international backing of the U.S.-led occupation of Afghanistan. Speaking at a NATO gathering, Biden defended the Obama administration's escalation of the Afghan war.
I know the people of Europe, like the people of my country, are tired of war, and they are tired of this war. But many of our citizens, both here in Europe and at home, question why we need to send troops and treasure so far from our homes. But we know that it was from the space that joins Afghanistan and Pakistan that the attacks of 9/11 occurred. We know that it was from the very same area that extremists planned virtually every major terrorist attack on Europe since 9/11. And the attack on Mumbai.
The Obama administration's ordered an additional 17,000 U.S. troops to Afghanistan and is hoping for more non-U.S. forces as well. The Obama administration's pick to become the nation's top intelligence analyst has withdrawn his nomination after an intense lobbying campaign by backers of the Israeli government policies. Former U.S. Ambassador Charles Chaz Freeman had come under Republican-led opposition over his comments criticizing Israel's occupation of Palestinian land. Freeman has years of diplomatic experience, including stints as U.S. ambassador to Saudi Arabia and assistant secretary of defense. Some Democrats joined in the opposition to Freeman's appointment. In a statement, Democratic Senator Charles Schumer took credit for Freeman's withdrawal, saying, quote, "I repeatedly urged the White House to reject him, and I am glad they did the right thing." In a statement, Freeman blasted lobby groups, lawmakers, and pundits who support Israeli government policies for forcing his withdrawal. Freeman wrote, quote, "The tactics of the Israel lobby plumb the depths of dishonor and indecency. The aim of this lobby is control of the policy process through the exercise of a veto over the appointment of people who dispute the wisdom of its views, the substitution of political correctness for analysis, and the exclusion of any and all options for decision by Americans and our government other than those that it favors." Freeman continued, quote, "I regret that my willingness to serve the new administration has ended by casting doubt on its ability to consider, let alone decide, what policies might best serve the interests of the United States rather than those of a lobby intent on enforcing the will and interests of a foreign government." Again, those the words of Chaz Freeman. In Israel and the occupied territories, a Palestinian family that lost 29 relatives in the Israeli attack on Gaza has filed a $200 million lawsuit against the Israeli government. The ordeal of the Samouni family drew international attention after it was revealed Israeli forces shelled their homes and then blocked medical aid. In addition to the 29 dead, another 45 relatives were injured, most of them children. Family member Naila Samouni described her family's ordeal.
"My mother-in-law died, my sister-in-law and her daughter, and two more people. The majority of my family died in the home that I am standing in now. Of course, we're going to file a lawsuit against them."
The surviving members of the Samouni family now live in the rubble of their destroyed homes. Meanwhile, an Israeli human rights group has filed a high court challenge seeking to block Israeli digging in the occupied West Bank. The group, Yesh Din, claims Israeli mining in the West Bank amounts to a robbery of Palestinian resources. Yesh Din attorney Michael Sfard said Israel's violating international law.
"Natural resources that are digged out of the earth in the West Bank is transferred into Israel for the benefit of the Israeli construction market. This is, of course, an illegal enterprise. It violates the very basic principles of international law and laws of belligerent occupation. It is also immoral because we're literally swallowing chunks of the earth of the West Bank that belongs to the people of the West Bank and for their future development."
According to the group Yesh Din, 75% of the resources mined by Israeli companies in the West Bank are being transferred to Israel. Some of the remaining gravel is being used to construct new Israeli settlements that further carve up Palestinian land. In Haiti, former President Bill Clinton joined UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon Tuesday to promote an anti-poverty initiative being launched there. Clinton said he sees signs of hope in the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere.
"I have followed Haiti for more than three decades. This is the first time I have ever really believed that the country had a chance to slip the bonds of poverty and escape the heritage of oppressive government and misgovernment and abuse of people that have held people down too long."
Clinton is sometimes described as a champion of Haitian democracy for restoring the overthrown elected President Jean-Bertrand Aristide after the first U.S.-backed coup. But Clinton was widely criticized for forcing Aristide to accept U.S.-imposed neoliberal economic policies as a condition for his return to office. Here in New York, hundreds of pro-Tibet demonstrators marched through the streets Tuesday to mark the 50th anniversary of the Tibetan uprising against China. The marchers passed by the UN and the Chinese consulate.
"Today is the 50th anniversary after we losing our country. So we are here to raise our voice to all the international people, especially to the Chinese, say that Tibet was independent and is an independent country still. So we are here together to tell the world the story about our Tibetan cause.
A parallel demonstration was held near the Chinese embassy in Washington, D.C. The Dalai Lama marked his 50 years in exile Tuesday by calling for meaningful autonomy for Tibet and accusing China of imposing a, quote, hell on earth. An Afghan journalist once jailed by the U.S. military has died in Afghanistan. 23-year-old Jawad Jojo Ahmed was shot and killed while reporting in Kandahar. Ahmed's death comes less than 6 months after his release from U.S. military imprisonment, after nearly a year of being held without charge. He was working as a videographer for the Canadian television network CTV when U.S. forces jailed him in October of 2007. He later revealed U.S. soldiers broke two of his ribs, deprived him of sleep, and held him in a grave-like cell during his captivity. After his release, Ahmed said he wanted to tell his story and help other prisoners abused at the U.S.-run Bagram prison where he was held. In a statement, law professor Barbara Olshansky of International Justice Network said, quote, Ahmed's death should compel all who have stood in the way of examining U.S. policies in Afghanistan to make way for the investigation that's been needed for 8 years. We are all responsible for the death of a brave young man who worked for the U.S. and Canada in Afghanistan and paid the ultimate price for his heroism, she said. The Obama administration has tapped author and activist Van Jones to become a special advisor for green jobs, enterprise, and innovation. Van Jones is expected to start next week. He is author of the best-selling book, The Green Collar Economy, which lays out a plan for a green economy he says could help solve the nation's economic inequality while also addressing the long-term environmental threats to our survival as a planet. Jones is founding president of Green for All and the founder of the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights. That group challenges human rights abuses within the U.S. criminal justice system. The indicted financier Bernie Madoff appeared in a federal court Tuesday on allegations of operating one of the biggest frauds in Wall Street history. Madoff was arrested last year and accused of running an estimated $50 billion Ponzi scheme. Madoff's lawyer says he'll plead guilty to all criminal charges in court tomorrow. He faces a prison sentence of 150 years. In Texas, caretakers at a state-run residential facility have been caught forcing disabled youths to fight each other. Cell phone video shows staffers provoking and then showing the youths to ensure they start fighting. Christie Police Captain Tim Wilson called the fights some of the worst child abuse he's seen in 30 years. In Alabama, a lone gunman killed at least 9 people in a shooting spree on Tuesday before taking his own life. 4 of the victims were relatives of the gunman. A new study says 1 in 50 American children are homeless. The National Center on Family Homelessness says the number marks an increase over 10 years ago and continues to grow. In Washington, D.C., a bus tour of foreclosed homeowners made its final stop on Tuesday after a cross-country trip. The Recovery Express picked up passengers who lost their homes in 8 cities across the country. Edith Adachi made the trip from Chicago.
My home is gone. I'm never going to get that home back again. But there's many of you who have homes and are on foreclosure, and there's something we can do about them. Yeah. And I'm here to represent all those people.
The Recovery Express was organized by the group People Improving Communities Through Organizing, or PICO. Organizers are calling for bankruptcy law reform that would grant troubled homeowners the right to appear before a bankruptcy court if banks won't negotiate with them. And the green architect Greg Franta has been found dead. His body was discovered inside his car in a ravine between Golden and Boulder, Colorado. It appears he crashed on his way home over a month ago when he was reported missing. Greg Franta was the chief architect at the Rocky Mountain Institute and named Colorado Architect of the Year in 1998. He worked with the Clinton administration to make the White House more energy efficient. He'd been spearheading the building of Democracy Now!'s own new studio, which we're looking forward to being the first LEED-certified TV, radio, internet studio in New York. And he was helping to make that happen. In this video for the Rocky Mountain Institute, Greg Franta spoke about the importance of green building.
When we think about high-performance buildings, it's having a lower environmental impact, and it's good for our economy, creating a better place for the building users, so it becomes sustainable in a variety of ways.
Greg Franta was 58 years old. His death is a tremendous loss for all of us. Our condolences to his family and to the Rocky Mountain Institute, which we know will continue to build on his dreams of building a more sustainable world. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Senate Finance Committee held the first of many hearings on President Obama's multi-billion dollar plans for health care reform yesterday. Peter Orszag, Obama's budget director, was the only witness called. He testified at the beginning of the session that he would not be able to provide details on the administration's plans for health care, but that all options are on the table.
Let me just note immediately, so that perhaps we can avoid the typical Washington game of gotcha, that the administration has been very clear that we put a significant down payment on the table. But with regard to benefits and coverage, we want to leave everything on the table at this point to allow the process to play out. So you should not expect, and you will not be receiving, definitive answers from me on exactly what the administration does or does not favor on the benefits and coverage side of health reform.
While Orszag says all options are on the table, President Obama's already rejected the idea of creating single-payer national health insurance. White House spokesperson Robert Gibbs said last week, quote, "The president doesn't believe that's the best way to achieve the goal of cutting costs and increasing access." Meanwhile, single-payer solutions get almost no space in the debate. A study has just been released by the media watch group Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. It found that in the week before Obama's health care summit last week, of the hundreds of stories that appeared in major newspapers and on the networks, only five included the views of advocates of single-payer, none of which appeared on television. Most opinion columns that mentioned single-payer were written by opponents. At the health care summit itself, initially not a single advocate for single-payer health care was invited. Congressmember John Conyers is the sponsor of H.R. 676 legislation that seeks to create a single-payer program. But when Conyers directly asked President Obama at a Congressional Black Caucus meeting if he could attend the summit, he was not immediately invited. Conyers had asked to bring Dr. Marcia Angel, the first woman editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine, the most prestigious medical journal in the country. And he asked to bring Dr. Quentin Young, perhaps the most well-known single-payer advocate in America. Dr. Young was Reverend Martin Luther King Jr.'s doctor when King lived in Chicago, but he came to know Barack Obama even better. Though his medical partner was Obama's doctor, Dr. Young was his neighbor, friend, and ally for decades. After much outcry, Conyers was invited, along with Oliver Fine, president of Physicians for a National Health Program. Dr. Young was not invited. Well, today, Dr. Quentin Young has been invited to join us from a studio in Chicago. We're also joined by two other advocates of single-payer health care. Jerry Jenkins is a registered nurse and the co-president of the California Nurses Association National Nurses Organizing Committee, a newly formed union that's America's largest nurses union, the fastest-growing union of any kind. She joins us from Washington, D.C., as does Russell McKiber. He's the editor of the Corporate Crime Reporter. He's just started a new group called Single Payer Action. He's going to the national meeting of the American Health Insurance Plans today in D.C. and is joining others in burning their health insurance bills outside in protest. We welcome you all to Democracy Now! Jerry Jenkins, let's begin with you. First of all, tell us about your new union of 150,000 registered nurses and why single payer is your critical issue.
Well, we've formed a group with the United American Nurses and the Massachusetts State Nurses, which is now 150,000 registered nurses, which is actually 10% of all the hospital-based nurses in the country. And we've done this because we really think nurses have a vital voice in defining how health care is delivered in this country. We are the first line of defense for patients. We're at the bedside 24 hours, seven days a week. And we have as a primary role as nurses to be the patient advocate. So we see up close and personal every day in our jobs what the current system of health care has done to people's lives. And so we feel very strongly that as a group of 150,000 nurses, that this gives us the ability to go out and advocate in a much stronger way for what we know is in the best interest of our patients and the public, which we believe is a single-payer health care plan.
What do you mean by single-payer, Jerry Jenkins?
Well, we support John Conyers' bill, H.R. 676, which would be publicly funded but privately administered, which means you would have complete choice in your doctors and your hospitals and where you go. It's basically an expansion of Medicare that would cover everyone. And we would really like to push to have an honest, open debate on how single-payer health care fits into the whole health reform issues that are being discussed here in Washington, because the way it is right now, as you said, it's pretty much been taken off the table. And we really think if we could get the Congressional Budget Office to cost it out, compare it to these other programs, it's pretty obvious it's the most cost-effective, efficient way to deliver health care. It creates a uniform, single standard of care, quality care for everyone, and we really think it is the best option out there. But as you said, it's pretty much not being discussed. So we really feel strongly that this is the answer.
Jerry Jenkins, we have to break, but we'll come back to Russell McKiber of Corporate Crime Reporter and Single Payer Action, as well as Dr. Quentin Young in a minute.
Somebody call for a doctor. I think I'm sick. Ain't had my medicine in over a week. My mind's fine, but my body feels weak. Call a doctor. I think I'm sick. My body, mess with my.
Call for a doctor, J.J. Cale, here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. We're broadcasting on close to 800 stations around the country, on Pacifica and NPR stations, low-power FM, college and community radio stations, on public access TV and PBS TV stations, and both TV satellite networks, on Dish Network, channel 9415 Free Speech TV, 9410 Link TV, and on DirecTV, channel 375. And we're video and audio podcasting at democracynow.org. Our headlines are also available in Spanish for any radio station to take, as over 200 are. And you can read the transcripts and listen to the Spanish headlines at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. As we talk about the issue of single payer, what the media almost discusses not at all, not to mention the administration or what's being considered in Capitol Hill right now. Our guests are Russell McKiber, who is just starting Single Payer Action, and Jerry Jenkins. They're both in Washington, D.C. In a minute, we'll be joined by Dr. Quentin Young in Chicago. Jerry Jenkins has just begun the largest nurses union in the country. She's a registered nurse and co-president of the California Nurses Association National Nurses Organizing Committee. I wanted to play for you a commercial. This is a commercial for H.R. 676.
What if we can save jobs and save lives? Single-payer Medicare for All, H.R. 676, would create 2.6 million new jobs and guarantee health care for all Americans. with coverage that allows you to choose your own doctor and never lose benefits, even if you move or lose your job. Single-payer health care, an American dream for everyone.
Jerry Jenkins, this is your advertisement.
Yes, it is.
Where is it playing?
Well, I'm not real sure right now where it's playing, but I think that one of the things that the advertisement points out that is being overlooked as well is the fact that converting to a single-payer system is a huge economic stimulus for the economy. Our research arm did a study, and it's pretty amazing what it turned up in that study, because not only does it create 2.6 million good, solid jobs that are American jobs that can't be outsourced, that, you know, that are here in this country, it would also save huge amounts of money, and it would stimulate the economy to the tune of $300 billion that gets put back into the system through converting to this kind of health care. It's the first study that's looked at the ripple effect. You know, everyone talks about how much we spend on health care, but they don't look at how much that health care generates in other jobs and industry that feeds into the system. So it could create a huge economic stimulus in and of itself. So that's the other side of it. In terms of the cost effectiveness and the ability to provide a product that's way better than what we provide now through the private insurance industry and employ people, it's a huge boon to the economy as well. So we think it's really a shame that this isn't being discussed further. And like I say, I've been up here in Washington going around with some groups of people, talking to some legislators and their aides, and the Congressional Business Office budget office isn't even costing it out to what it would cost in comparison to these other plans, which is really interesting, because I think if they did that, they would find it's pretty glaringly obvious what the most cost-effective plan is and the plan that would provide the best optimal care for people at the best cost. So,
Jerry Jenkins,
it's really interesting.
Last September, 1,000 nurses symbolically bridged the health care gap by marching across San Francisco's Golden Gate Bridge. The nurses were calling for single-payer health care. One of the speakers was Hilda Sarkisian. Her daughter, Madeline, died after she was denied a liver transplant by Cigna Health.
I want the whole world to know that we have a broken healthcare system. I'm a mother that's gone through so much, and a lot of moms are going through the same thing that I've gone through, and we need to stop this, and we need to stop this now. If our government can have an emergency meeting to bail out $700 billion, they can always have a meeting, a 10-minute meeting for health care. This is so important for all of us. I wish I could go there and then face them eye to eye and tell them, only if you would do it, only if it's your own child. Because they don't care. They're getting paid every month. They're getting paid on time. They're cutting our health care so the CEO will enjoy his life or her life. This is not right, you guys. We're going to fight for all of us, for my daughter, Natalie. She's been with me. She was with me last night. She came in my dream as a baby, and I know she's telling me, go, Mom, go get them, and I'm going to do it. Yeah. Insurance company can't decide who's going to live and who's going to die. Yeah. Only doctors and nurses. Thank you.
Jerry Jenkins, you are going to be holding a news conference today on Capitol Hill, an introduction of a new bill to guarantee comprehensive, quality, cost-effective health care for all Californians, as you're putting it at the news conference today. Can you explain what this is?
Well, in California, we have actually gotten a single-payer bill through the state legislature on two occasions, and on two occasions, Arnold Schwarzenegger vetoed it. So we are reintroducing our bill in California today. It was SB 840. The new number is SB 810. It's being introduced by Mark Leno. And we really feel that with a change of governor in California, that we could vote in single payer in California. We've proven it can get through the legislature not once but twice. So we think that's a significant moment. And I was involved in the Natalie thing from the very beginning. And when I was there at Cigna, when we finally pushed them unfortunately too late to provide a transplant for Natalie. And it's just really atrocious that we let decisions be made based on money and not on human life and what's necessary to keep people alive. The Sarkeesians had insurance, and that's the telling thing here. They had insurance. They've done everything that was expected of them. They worked hard. They provided insurance. And yet, when they needed it, it wasn't there for them. And I think that's really telling, because the insurance industry is here in Washington this week having their big confab, and as we read in the Washington Post last week, they're spreading a lot of money around to keep people in the legislature trying to influence the debate, to deflect away from their role in undermining the quality of care in this country by sucking a third of the money out and putting it into profits and overhead and CEOs' wages, as opposed to focusing the debate on what's really going to be effective in providing health care for everyone in this country.
And, Russell McIver, I want to bring into the conversation, longtime editor of the Corporate Crime Reporter. Russell, you're starting a new group now, Single Payer Action. Why?
On the web at singlepayeraction.org. Good morning, Amy. Well, our motto, by the way, is no compromise with the health insurance industry. And here's the situation in Washington. According to recent polling, 60% of Americans support single-payer Medicare for all. The majority of the doctors support it. The majority of the nurses support it. The majority of health economists support it. So why isn't it happening? It's not happening because the legislation, single-payer legislation, would put the health insurance industry out of business. So to be a player in Washington now, you have to kowtow to the powerful health insurance industry, and you have to say the following six words. Single payer is off the table. Now, who's saying single payer is off the table? The health insurance industry, the Obama White House, the Democratic-controlled Congress, and most disgracefully, even some so-called public interest groups like Healthcare for America Now, which was at this demonstration yesterday and hijacked the demonstration, and it should have been a single-payer demonstration, and it wasn't. So that's why we're creating singlepayeraction.org. We want to get a million people to sign up, and we want to have a direct confrontation with the health insurance industry and their lackeys in Congress. Take my district, the 2nd District of West Virginia, Shelley Moore Capito, moderate Republican. She comes from a coal state. She kowtows to the coal industry, no question. She takes over 10 years in Congress. She's taken $290,000 from the mining industry. But she's taken $300,000 from the insurance industry. So we're going to get people in front of her office in Martinsburg and in front of her office in Charleston. And we are going to protest the fact that she has buckled to the insurance industry against the interests of her own constituents throughout the 2nd District. Now, 18,000 Americans, thanks to the good work of the California Nurses, Physicians for a National Health Program, we know what the answer is, and the American people know what the answer is. We know that 18,000 Americans die every year due to lack of health insurance. We know that half of the personal bankruptcies are triggered by medical bills. We know that single-payer Medicare for all would create 3 million jobs. We'd lose some jobs because you're putting the health insurance industry out of business, so you get a net 2.6 million. We know what the answer is. And I'm sick and tired of hearing, well, Obama's just a politician and he'll blow with the wind, so we have to create the wind. We need some leadership here. The reason they don't want single-payer on the table is they know that if it's on the table, it's going to pass because the American people want it. Doctors, used to be doctors were against it, but now doctors are in favor of it. Nurses have been in favor of it. And it's the usual situation where the will of the American people is being stopped by the powerful players in Washington. Now, I'm going to burn this bill. I'm going from here to the Ritz-Carlton, where the insurance industry is meeting, and I'm going to burn this bill. This is my health insurance bill. I pay $8,000 a year for a $5,400 deductible bill for a family of four. And when I need the health insurance, which I did a couple years ago, I ended up in the hospital where the hospital was in network and the doctor was out of network, where they wouldn't cover the ambulance ride to the hospital. And that's just mild compared to the stories that we hear all across America. Now, there is an answer. The answer is not email campaigns. Congress is becoming immune to email campaigns. The answer is not letter writing. The answer is direct face-to-face confrontation with the insurance industry and with Congress, with your members of Congress in your district. So we're calling on Americans to sign up at singlepayeraction.org and to organize protests in front, get to know your district, your member of Congress district office. Probably less than 5% of Americans know where the district office of their member of Congress. Get to know it. Camp out there. Call the local media. The local media is going to love it. And let's get this thing done. Let's push through single payer for the American people like the rest of the civilized world has. Thank you.
The chair of the Senate Finance Committee, Montana Democrat Max Baucus, has also plainly said single payer is off the table. I want to play a clip of what he had to say at an event recently. He was asked why single payer was not being considered as an option.
I know that in the Helena Independent Record, you were quoted as saying that single-payer health care is off the table. I'd like to know your reasons for putting single-payer health care off the table and intending instead to a mandatory insurance payment, or I'm sorry, purchase by Americans, which is an inefficient way of guaranteeing health care to everyone.
Well, I just have to make a judgment, and I think at this time in this country, the single payer is not going to get even to first base in the Congress. And we're also we're a big country. We're a battleship. We're an ocean liner. We're not a PT boat. We're not a speedboat. It takes time to turn those big ships. You just can't just turn them overnight. We are, the United States of America, we're a different country. We're constituted differently than European countries, than Canada and other countries. We're a younger country. There's more of our entrepreneurial sense in America than there is other countries. It's kind of go west, young man, and, you know, in America and so forth. So we've got to come up with our uniquely American result. And our uniquely American result will be a combination of public and private insurance. But one which everyone has covered, and just my judgment, and every member of Congress agrees with me, I think, is those I've spoken with, that this is not the time to push for single pay. And it may come down, may come later, but it's not going to happen in America, in my view. So I'm not going to waste my time pushing on something that isn't going to happen.
Montana Democratic Senator Max Baucus, seen as the most important figure on Capitol Hill around the issue of health care right now, the most powerful force, with Senator Kennedy being ill. Dr. Quentin is with us now from Chicago, National Coordinator for Physicians for National Health Program. He was Reverend Martin Luther King's doctor when King was organizing in Chicago. He was a close ally of Barack Obama in Chicago. He wasn't invited to the White House Health Care Summit last week, but he is going to Washington tomorrow. Dr. Quentin Young, your response to Senator Baucus, and welcome.
Well, greetings, Amy. He was naming the ways in which our country is supposedly different from other countries. He neglected one huge one, the millions of dollars that people like him receive from these huge vested interests in the health industry, and how somehow that influences their certitude that America is not ready for decent health care guaranteed by the national government. It's really a major tragedy because time has run out. If even without the economic downturn, which is a very polite way to describe our present plight, we would have to have this reform. But with it, we will not, as economically, let alone medically, survive. And it's painful to have people in high places like Senator Baucus deny the democratic method of debating the pros and cons, even, of these various proposals. It is pitiful, and we have to, as has already been pointed out, get the American people outraged at this taking away of the right to decent health care in this richest, still richest, of all countries. So I have no pity for Senator Baucus's position. It's wrong, and we're going to have to overcome it.
First, I want to congratulate you, Dr. Young. This past weekend, hundreds of people turned out for a big celebration. You're 85 now. You had the Illinois governor, the new Illinois governor there. You had three Congress members celebrating your life. Yeah. You've been a longtime friend of Barack Obama. How has he changed over the years?
Well, Barack Obama, as we know, was a community organizer, a very lofty calling in my book, and he made the decision when the opportunity came that he could get more done politically, and he accepted the nomination for the seat in the state Senate. It's not that long ago, really. It's about 6, 8 years ago. Barack Obama, in those early days, influenced, I hope, by me and others, categorically said single-payer was the best way, and he would inaugurate it if he could get the support, meaning majorities in both houses, which he's got, and the presidency, which he's got. And he said that on more than one occasion, and it represented the very high-grade intelligence we all know Barack has. However, as his political fortunes went upward, including the campaign for presidency, the nomination, and finally the election, he qualified his position from saying it's the best system, but that given the past American history with employment-based health care, he would have a plan that, and he has put one forward, that encompasses other incremental approaches.
I want to play what President Obama himself said about single payer and how his position appears to have changed. This is what he said back in June of 2003, before he was elected even to the U.S. Senate.
I happen to be a proponent of a single payer universal health care plan. The United States of America, the wealthiest country in the history of the world, spending 14% of its gross national product on health care, cannot provide basic health insurance to everybody. And that's what Jim's talking about when he says everybody in, nobody out. A single-payer health care plan, universal health care plan.
That was State Senator Obama. This is Senator Obama. He's speaking more recently when he was on the presidential campaign trail.
On what you were just addressing,
right.
And why not single payer? Why not get the corporates battling and the lobbyists out of the way and just go to a single payer?
Well, I've said this before. If I were designing a system from scratch, then I'd probably set up a single-payer system. For those of you who aren't familiar with the terminology, single-payer basically means that you've got one government-funded program. It doesn't have to all be government-run, but it's government-funded. Everybody, Medicare would be an example of a single-payer system if everybody was in Medicare. But the problem is we're not starting from scratch. We've got a system in which most people have become accustomed to getting their health insurance through their employer. And for us to sort of immediately transition from that, and given that a lot of people work for insurance companies, a lot of people work for HMOs, you've got a whole system of institutions that have been set up, making that transition in a rapid way, I think, would be very difficult. And people don't have time to wait. They need relief now. So my attitude is, let's build off the system that we've got. Let's make it more efficient. We may be, over time, as we make the system more efficient and everybody's covered, decide that there are other ways for us to provide care more effectively.
That's Senator Obama on the presidential campaign trail. Dr. Quentin Young, what's wrong with that?
Well, it's one of the few times when Barack has been dishonest. He knows, and all America knows, that our experience with employment-based insurance and these other Mickey Mouse things have been increasingly a total disaster. You have a $2.5 trillion industry with vested interests, the private hospitals that for profit, the HMOs, the health insurance industry, making billions upon billions, and things getting worse. He knows and should act on the fact that time is running out. the American people are hurting. Over a million Americans go bankrupt due to medical bills each year, and there's a new study, incidentally, that will show that 50% of the bankruptcies are due to health costs. It will be 60%. So we have a worsening situation, and a man who wants to lead a country which is in great peril had best do some courageous things. I really feel that we have to mount a national concern about this. As a doctor, up until, what, a year ago, after 60 years of practice, I can testify that this system is, well, broken is a gross understatement. It's wrecked, and it's ruining people, and the public can't put up with it anymore.
And Dr. Quentin Young, explain, over and over, you hear Senator Baucus, you hear President Obama saying it's not that they're against this, at least Obama certainly was saying this, it's that it's impractical and people won't support it. What is the polling, what are the polling figures on single payer? And we almost never see it discussed on television unless an opponent brings it up.
Well, let me say, we have single payer in this country. It was enacted in 1965. It's called Medicare. And it was put through the Congress by Lyndon Johnson. And in overnight, in 1 year, the system was put in place, and it's probably the best insurance program in the whole country. The seniors of this country are highly dependent on Medicare. It's kept them from penury, and it was done in 1 year, Amy. No drag out, no problems. All the things that people worried about just didn't happen. Now we're talking about somewhat more complicated, but not much, giving single payer to everybody in the country. It's its simplicity that is its virtue. It has one source of payment. Doctors don't have to wait as they do so often presently. There's no hassles. There's people who will be unemployed. Let's concede the vast army of people that are dedicated to denying care in the present insurance system will be no longer needed. And our bill, House Bill 676, sponsored first of all by Congressman Conyers, but with 92 supporters in the last Congress, we're up to 60 in this. It's extremely popular. This bill will once enacted, will take a year at the most to fully implement, and then the huge burden of fear of getting sick, which is the plight of almost all America. It's not a poor person's problem any longer. It's middle-class America, and it has to be changed. I wish somehow Barack could see this as the thing that will give dignity and grace to his tenure at the very beginning. It's very important that this be enacted.
It seems that the single most important word that people are using is choice, that people want choice.
Indeed they do, and indeed they're entitled to it. That choice has all but disappeared under the burden of private insurance schemes, which gives you limited panels. An employer, which has been vaunted minutes ago by President Obama, these employers change plans, and you have to get brand new doctors, continuity is lost. It's a zoo. The choice under single payer is total. The only limiting factor is the number of people a doctor may see. That apart, your card is good for any program you approach, and its choice is total. And it really is the only way to go. Let me mention something that's important enough to be underlined. Under the weight of this private insurance system, doctors have finished training with huge debts, $150,000 on average, and the specialties, as it's worked out under a private system, are paid on average 2 to 3 times what primary care doctors get. Primary care is very simple. It's family practitioners, pediatricians, and general internists. You need about 60% of your doctors in that category to have a balanced system. Well, that's been slipping away, and now we're well under 50% of primary care care doctors, and that has to be reversed, or no system will work. And increasingly, there's large areas in this country where people cannot find a primary care doctor, and in almost every certainly metropolitan area, there's an excess of specialists.
You say now, Dr. Young, that although the AMA during Roosevelt's time prevented national health insurance from being passed, that the majority of doctors in America today are for single payer?
Yes, I'm saying that emphatically, Amy. A study, April 2008, a refereed study published in the very prestigious Annals of Internal Medicine had the very, for me, very happy return that 59% of America's doctors now support a government-run national health insurance.
And finally, Dr.
Healthcare.
Young, because we just have a minute, this brouhaha over the last week with the White House health care summit, 120 people, there were going to be no single-payer advocates. Congressman Conyers asked to go. At first, he was told no. He directly asked President Obama at a Congressional Black Caucus hearing. He asked to bring you and Marcia Angel, former editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine. You weren't allowed to go. Do you have President Obama's ear anymore? You have been an ally of his for years, for decades.
Well, it's mixed. I think we're friends, certainly, at this gala that you mentioned, which was embarrassing. He did send a very complimentary letter, and I appreciate that. But I'd much rather have him enact single payer, to tell the truth. And we did, it's fair to say, after a good deal of protest, I think we were told there was phones rang off the hook. They did allow our national president, Dr. Oliver Fine, to attend with Dr. Conyers, Congressman Conyers. That's fine, but we need many more people, representative of the American people at large, to get this thing through the Congress, and Baucus would notwithstanding be overruled.
There tomorrow, you're headed to Congress. You're going to be meeting with a Senate group on this issue?
I am indeed. I was invited, and we're there. Let's be candid. They don't want a lot of single-payer presence. But they can't keep it out. Trade unions across the country, and by the hundreds, have endorsed it. There are lay groups, by that I mean non-professional groups. Nurses, the California Nurses, National Nurses Organizing Committee are for it. It's a very formidable list, Amy, of popularity. The American people understand it, and they want it, and we have to make it happen.
Dr. Quentin Young, I want to thank you for being with us. Physicians for National Health, your group is called
Program.
Physicians for National Health Program, PNHP.org.
Yes.
Russell McKiber, I want to thank him, corporate crime reporter, his group, SinglePayerAction.org, and Jerry Jenkins with the California Nurses Association National Nurses Organizing Committee, NNOC.net. We'll link to all of those sites. These are the voices that are not being heard in the media, and we'll see how much they get heard on Capitol Hill. I'm Amy Goodman. In a minute, we'll come back to Congressmember Raul Grijalva, why he's so focused on the elections in El Salvador. Stay with us.
Danny was born 10 weeks too soon. Your baby in the ICU. Low down pride. Summer's gone.
Feeney, national health care now. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Well, voters in El Salvador are heading to the polls Saturday for a historic presidential election. Polls project the leftist FMLN party will take power for the first time, ending two decades of conservative rule by the Arena Party. The FMLN's a former guerrilla group that fought El Salvador's U.S.-backed military government in a civil war from 1980 to 92. Last week, 30 members of the U.S. House of Representatives sent President Obama a letter calling for U.S. neutrality in Saturday's election. Historically, the right-wing Arena Party has had close ties to Washington. 5 years ago, the Bush administration was accused of threatening to cut off aid to El Salvador if voters supported the FMLN. We're joined now from the Capitol Rotunda by Democratic Congressmember Raul Grijalva of Arizona. He co-authored the letter to President Obama. He's co-chair of the Progressive Caucus. We don't have much time, Congressmember Grijalva, but explain why what you're calling for right now, what you asked President Obama to do.
Well, thank you, Amy. Essentially, we're asking the administration not only for neutrality, but for a word about a public statement about the intent of this government and this administration to refrain from the activities of the Bush administration in the 2004 election, where we threatened Salvadorian immigrants here, of which 20% of the population of El Salvador, Salvadoreños, are here in the United States. We threatened them with their immigration status. We threatened not to allow them to send remittances back home to their families, which is 25% of the gross national product in El Salvador. And those threats had an effect on the election in 2004. We're asking the Obama administration for some real consistency. If we're going to export democracy, it's done by supporting the sovereignty of a nation, allowing the people in that nation to make the choice that they want in terms of who's going to be their leadership. And in this election on the 15th in El Salvador, where the left has an opportunity to take control of a government, it's a trend that's going on in Latin America. And we're asking the administration for neutrality, just as we want elections here in this country not interfered by any other foreign power.
And what response have you gotten from President Obama?
The indications are that they're going to hold to neutrality. Public statements from some lower administration people have been that that's going to be the policy. We're urging that it come from higher up, from somebody at a cabinet level, or more importantly, from the president himself, saying that to the Salvadorian people, it's your election, it's your decision, it's not ours, and we respect that. That's the vote that you have coming up.
Congressman Raul Grijalva, we just have 30 seconds. We just spent the hour talking about single payer. It's not discussed very much on Capitol Hill. Do you support single payer health care?
Absolutely do. And I think it needs to be on the table in the discussion that's coming up. I was glad that Congressman Conyers and other single payer advocates were invited to the health summit. It's important that it remain on the table. I think the American people support the concept. We're going to talk about realistic and real access and real affordability in this country for health care for people that don't have it or people that are underserved with health care, then single payer has to be on the table.
Congressmember Grijalva, I want to thank you for being with us. he heads back to his district in Tucson, Arizona this weekend. That does it for the show. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Shri Photo Caduce, Aaron Mata, Angela Kamen, Steve Martinez, Nicole Salazar, Hani Masood, Robbie Karen. I'm Amy Goodman. Our website, democracynow.org. Thanks for joining us.